The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning.
How are you, Rick?
Great. Enjoying a rainy morning here in what's normally sunny Arizona.
Wow, at least that's an unusual day for September 11th.
September 11th, listen to some of the commemoration going on this morning, 11 years since that fateful day when I was woken up with an early morning phone call to turn on the news.
Yeah, I remember that day because I was working, as I usually am this time of year, on September 15th, filing things, and my daughter actually called me from Japan. She was working in Japan at the time and said, turn on the news, because there it was a decent hour where I was. It was like 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning, something like that. So,
wow. I have a friend who was in an airplane on the tarmac at the airport there in New York City, and they locked it down, and he watched everything through a little through the window, his window seat, saw the second airplane hit the tower from his seat there. So,
oh, wow.
Spooky day, and a day that's truly changed our nation. And I think that the impact that day had is still being measured, and we're facing a day here in the upcoming election that may have as much impact on our nation, that may have as much of an effect on the direction our nation takes. And we're kind of winding up the presidential and congressional election cycle here. And a lot of times we touch a little bit on the political news and then move on. But today we're going to focus entirely upon how this election cycle is going to affect our wealth. The big decisions hang in the balance for our nation that will affect our finances. All the tax policies, fiscal policies, monetary policies, social policies, foreign policies, and the general political philosophy of the candidates is going to have an enormous ability on our impact on our ability to create wealth, to preserve wealth, and certainly to pass wealth on to future generations. And, you know, a challenge we face as planners is that in order to navigate and make a plan, we have to know what the rules are. And when we don't know what the rules are, it's really, really tough to make a plan. And that's kind of been the situation we've been dealing with in the last 10 years. The estate tax rules have changed, I think, 7 times and set to change yet another time. And so to navigate the issues, we've got to look past some of the nonsense that all the politicians talk about and figure out the real world consequences of the choices we're faced. So today we're going to kind of try and unpack some of that, look at what's going on. It's an interesting political dynamic right now. We have, of course, a democratically controlled Senate, a Republican controlled House, president up for reelection. And that's created a really, in some ways, entertaining situation to watch as the politicians try and make decisions and see who can, who they can shift the blame to for the decisions that have been made. So what do you think, Rich? Where are we going to go with this upcoming election, and how's it going to affect our money?
Well, I'm sure as you meet with clients every day like I do, this is a huge topic, and as you point out, very, very difficult to plan. And so we're always discussing with clients, and they're trying to make decisions about, okay, do I do something now? Do I wait? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? And I think, you know, what I've come down to is that in looking at our fiscal situation since these, since the lame duck Congress of 2010, where we got some pretty good tax rates for everyone, and on the estate and gift tax side, we got some incredible benefits. But one thing you can bet on, which I think we all ought to just step back and take a look at reality, is it's not likely to get better, because you have to raise revenue one way or the other when you're this far in debt. And so even if tax rates on certain things drop, the base is going to be have to be expanded on what they're taxing, because you got to raise more money. So it's just not likely, when people say, well, you know, is this 5 million thing going to stay in effect or not? And I just say, look, it's not likely to get better. Yeah, it might stay the same. Who knows? They could extend it for 6 months. I've heard that proposal. I've heard that extending it for a year as a proposal. But most everyone, when they talk about that, are talking about estate tax rates or exemptions, not gift tax exemptions, which is what you and I work with a lot, Rick, because you can do something with a gift right now because you're alive. You can't do the estate thing. You just have to worry about, well, what's it going to be when I die? And none of us know that. So,
we live in this position right now, and this is part of the problem. You point out we haven't had actual long-term rules. All we've had is short-term extensions, and you know, part of the dynamic for that is if they have to base their budgets on what the long-term rules are, and if the long-term rules are undecided, then they don't have to make the tough decisions in the budget. So they leave all the tax rates, the exemption rates, the all that a wild card. It expires, and even you know, for the last 4 years, we've not had a budget passed. We've had continuing spending resolutions, so the tax cuts are expiring, the estate tax rates and cuts are expiring, the budget has expired, and in fact, the government will shut down after September 30th if they don't pass more extensions of the spending rates. So everything's set to shut off, reset, push the red button on the back, it all blips and goes blank, and we get nothing. So it's just a really challenging environment to plan in.
So I'm wondering, just to kind of help our listeners through these, you know, in a logical way of, maybe we should talk first about what do we expect to happen with these, you know, we've got individual rates that are due to be reset at the beginning of 2013. So let's talk about what's going on with just individual income tax rates, because those are a big deal. And those are going to affect our wealth dramatically, especially, you know, the interest and dividend side of this whole equation. So why don't we start there, and what's happening in Congress on those things, Rick?
Well, if the current 2012 wage income rate, the top rate is 36.45%, and if politicians do nothing, if they just hang out and let things go, that's going to jump to 43.15%, which is a 4.6% increase. Interest income is currently
taxed. That's actually a 6.7% increase.
Oh, you're right. I misread the same diagram you're looking at. I looked at the wrong number. Interest income is going to go from 35% to 44.6%, a 9.6% increase. Dividends is a killer. It goes from 15% to 44.6%, a 29.6% increase. Just unbelievable. And by the way, that's that 29.6%. It's a little misleading to say that that's a 29.6% increase. It's actually a 200% increase because it's 15% times 3, which is a 200% increase. It's just that it's an increase from 15% to 44.6%. It's kind of algebra with the numbers there, but it's a
huge percentage increase, that's for sure. And it's just that the rate is going up by 29.6%.
Yeah.
From the current 15. So obviously you get to, as you say, go from 15 to 45 effectively. And then what about capital gains?
It's going from 15 to 25, which, you know, I have to say, unless they hammer the charitable giving, when capital gain tax rates are high, there's a lot more charitable giving when people sell highly appreciated assets. So the charitable community is kind of interesting. They sometimes, on the one hand, will say, well, yeah, lower capital gains rates are good for the economy generally, but for charities, higher tax rates are kind of better, because then when you're faced with that dilemma, I'm selling an appreciated asset, I'm either going to give the money to the tax man or I'm going to give it to charity. A lot of individuals will make the tough call and give it to charity instead of the politicians. So the charities benefit in that environment.
You know, one thing we ought to point out here, Rick, is what makes up the pieces of this going from, let's say, on dividends or capital gains. How does it get from 15 to 44.6 or 15 to 25? And the way that happens is that we've got the Bush tax cuts, as they're called, that happened in 2001, 2003. What happens if Congress does nothing in 2013 is that those cuts go away. So we end up with dividends getting 25% added back, because that's what they were pre-Bush tax cuts, and then the capital gains get 5% added back. And then you have this phase out of itemized deductions, which is going to increase our tax rate. So if you phase out deductions, that effectively increases your tax rate. We've got 1.2% of it happening with that. And then you have this Medicare HI tax, which is part of the Obamacare provisions, that adds another 3.8%. And so if you add those all up, then you end up with 10% increase for capital gains, 29.6% for dividends. So, and I think, to be fair, that 3.8% affects, I believe, only the high incomers, as they're called, those with individuals with 200,000 or above, or joint filers with 250,000 or above.
Right.
So these are the maximum rates that it could go to. And that's what we're illustrating is, because most of the people that we work with will be affected by all of those tax increases. Overall, it could be 3.8% lower than that for some people.
The tendency has been, and we've seen this repeatedly in the last, and in fairness, not just during the Obama administration, the same thing happened in the Bush administration, that we're not getting a permanent, so-called, you know, long-term, this is the tax rate from now on kind of thing. They just extend it for 1 year or 2 years and kick the can a little ways down the road, and in this case, have it all expire right in the middle of the election cycle. So once again, we don't know. We don't know what the rules are going to be. We don't. And clients all the time ask me, kind of back to your issue, tell me, predict for me, prognosticate. Well, what's going to be the outcome of the election? And I've been wrong so many times. I don't like to make predictions, but I, like you, I will say, well, think through. The politicians, the probability of the politicians changing the tax laws is 100%. When politicians are at play and the tax laws are going to be affected, what's your guess? Are the taxes going up or down? And I don't think anybody seriously thinks that they're going to go down and stay down. The trend, frankly, on a global scale, we've seen France and other countries recently increase their so-called rich taxes on the rich to the point where tens of thousands of millionaires have been fleeing France, looking for some other place to go. And I've actually seen a similar trend. I don't know if you've seen this with your clients, Rich. I've had in the last year probably more than a dozen of my clients seriously contemplating, in fact, some of them have in fact done so, seriously contemplating leaving the U.S., taking their money with them, and going to some other tax environment where their wealth is not going to be confiscated. Those are serious issues. And in fact, one of the factors you can look at is, which way do the rich people run? Are the rich people trying to get in, or are they trying to get out? And that tells us.
Well, I think we saw one high-profile individual do that. One of the Facebook founders. I can't remember his name, but I know that there was a big story about that when Facebook went public, because I think he went to one of the, you know, somewhere in the in Asia is where he ended up, and because the tax rules were so much better. Yeah. And he made a plan, he did the proper things, he got out, and of course, you know, Congress held hearings and, you know, pounded the table and did whatever they were going to do, but that's what happens when you don't have fiscal responsibility and tax laws that people can depend on, is they find, if you can, you go somewhere else. And unfortunately, that's kind of where we are, and our politicians are just going to have to grapple with that. And the best way to do it is not to, you know, try to punish people like him, but it's to just come up with some things that people can depend on and plan on, and then things settle down and people figure it out. But right now we've got individual rates in play, we've got investment rates in play, we've got estate and gift tax rates in play. So it's very difficult for anybody to plan and know really what to do. I mean, even right now, what are people supposed to do with dividends and interest and capital gains? Should they try to get those into 2012 or push them up to 2013? You know, it's a big question, and it's one that really impacts wealth. And so it's something that we have to look at and try to figure out as we talk about these things with our clients. So Rick, we're going to take a break, and on the other side, we're going to come back and talk more about the party platforms and what the Senate and House have been doing, what we expect them to do. So we'll pick that up right after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Are you an entrepreneur that wants to achieve more? Not just in it for profit, but to do work you find meaningful, that adds more value to more people in more ways? Listen for Be More, Achieve More, Inspiration for the Entrepreneurial Mind. With host Chris Cooper, you'll hear from successful achievers from around the world with a passion and experience to offer invaluable guidance. These people are making a difference and will help give you the motivation and insight to achieve more. Be More, Achieve More can be heard live Fridays at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back. As I mentioned right before the break, Rick, we're going to talk about the platforms that each of the major political parties have come up with, and actually even some of the not so major ones. But I just want to make sure that all of our listeners know that in addition to emailing us, we're open to calls where we can speak live, talk to people about their issues, and that can be done at 480-324-8000. So call us anytime, set up a time, we'll talk. That's always an interesting and fun thing for us to do. So we look forward to those calls. So Rick, let's jump in and tell us about the platforms. What are the Democrats and the Republicans and some of the other parties talking about as far as taxes and their platforms?
Okay, I love this issue. I love to hear the political parties talk about this. It exposes a great deal of their thinking. And we're specifically going to look at the tax platforms. And the 2012 Democratic National platform labeled Moving America Forward states that they're committed to defeating the efforts that would return us to the failed economic policies of the past, in which tax relief for the wealthy explodes the deficit and asks the middle class to shoulder the burden. And we can talk about how much of that is factually accurate. But and so they're going to basically give tax cuts to the middle class and tax everybody who's making over $250,000 a year. And so this is asking the wealthiest Americans to pay their fair share and to get rid of all the Bush tax cuts and all their loopholes and deductions for the rich people, and reforming the tax code so that it'll be more fair. And it's about fairness. And but I'm just not going to comment on that. Let's then, interestingly enough, I want to just throw in here the Socialist Party, their economic platform. They want to get us out of every free trade agreement that we've ever been in. They want worker and community ownership of all corporations, so that no one but the workers owns it. A minimum wage of $15 an hour, indexed to cost of living. And mandatory full employment. They would outlaw unemployment so that you just can't have it. And that all insurance and financial companies, all banks and everything would be owned by the government, and a steeply graduated income tax and a steeply graduated estate tax. And taxes, of course, on all capital gains and luxuries, because those are are bad, and we have to compensate communities, pay the communities that own all the businesses, pay them to be able to advance their the goal of creating a socialist society totally separate from the global capitalist economy. Okay, and of course, getting rid of the monetary International Monetary Fund and some other things. Now, that's kind of an interesting contrast. The Republican platform is to create budget surpluses. To abolish the budget surpluses, which are the result of overtaxation. So they believe that if we cut taxes, the economy will thrive, and then there will be more tax revenues. They want to double the child tax credit, encourage entrepreneurship by capping the top marginal rates and ending the death tax and making permanent the research and development credit, promote charitable giving and education, foster capital investments, and they want to help with home ownership and repealing all the estate taxes. Now, I want to address this whole issue. I'm just going to be blunt. This failed economic policies of the past. We hear that phrase thrown around all the time. And the policies that have failed are the tax and spend policies. It's only been when the fiscal conservatives, those that are saying, hey, we shouldn't tax so much and we shouldn't spend so much. It's only been when they have caved in to those that are clamoring, we need to tax more and spend more, that our economy has failed. It's, you know, I heard recently that firemen don't start the fire. They show up after the fire's going. But they don't blame the person who started the fire. They put water on it and put the fire out. But we've had fiscal and economic policies that get to the fire, and instead of putting water on the fire, complain about the people who started it, and then pull out cans of gasoline and throw gas on the fire and say that we've got to stop those failed economic policies of using water to put out fires. We should use gasoline to put out fires. So tripling the deficit, spending money, borrowing money from China and other places to pay for bailouts and social programs doesn't create economic stability. It creates economic instability. People are afraid. We just cannot sustain the rate of spending we've been having and keep it going. So I guess I exposed my politics there a little bit, but that whole phrase, the failed economic policies of the past, are the progressive tax and spend policies. And they're not new. They're old. In fact, if anybody that's studied history, that's studied the economic conditions of nations right before they collapse, both modern and ancient. It's happened in Germany and Italy and Japan and other places. When the economies fail, the printing presses are going wild. Governments are borrowing money or just printing money, giving away things for food for free. The Romans, bread and circuses. If we give them free bread and entertain them with circuses, they won't riot in the streets. And we're seeing similar things going on now. So those are kind of the platforms, and that's my little bit of commentary on it. Bring us back here, Rich, and talk to us. Let's talk for a few minutes about some of the actual tax policies and how they're going to change specifically relative to the estate and gift taxes. There's some interesting stuff going on there with both the budget proposals we have and some of the bills that are pending in Congress right now.
Okay, that's a really good point, Rick. You mentioned earlier that that the Democrat side of this equation, they've become basically silent of late on what's going to happen with the estate and gift taxes. If you look at the Senate passed bill in July, it's silent on estate and gift taxes. And the platform, as you mentioned, is they're silent on estate and gift taxes.
Maybe we could get those back into the platform like we did God and
Jerusalem.
Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. Maybe we could call a vote and have them put it back in over the objection of most of their party.
Yeah, that was an interesting little chaotic thing that happened at the Democratic National Convention, for sure. I think one thing we can look at, though, is what was in Obama's budget, which was proposed several months ago in regard to estate and gift taxes. And here's what he proposed. He wanted to bring the estate tax exemption back to 3.5 million and a 45% rate. That's just on the estate side. On the gift side of that equation, it wasn't going to be unified anymore. In other words, both of them aren't going to be 3.5 million. The gift tax rate was to come back to 1 million on the lifetime gift tax exemption, again with a 45% rate. So that's coming from 5.12 million back to 1 million. That's a $4.12 million swing and a 10% increase in the rate. And so we see that what the thinking is, even though they've decided to be silent on that because they want to fight for the middle class and everything that's going on there on the income tax rates and not focus on this until later and when they can deal with this maybe in a tax reform sort of way. But if they've gone silent on it, and we have a Democratic president, we have a Democratic-controlled Senate, the likelihood is they're not going to, nobody's going to deal with that, which means what, Rick, if they don't deal with it before year?
Well, yeah, if they do nothing, if they can't decide and it automatically sunsets at the end of the year, and we're going to get that $1 million rate across the board for lifetime gift exclusions as well as the estate tax exclusions.
And the rate will go to 55%, everyone's clear.
Right. And it's important to point out that this is, interestingly enough, bipartisan. Both parties, both the Republicans and the Democrats, are really divided on the estate and gift tax issues. Within their own caucuses, they have radically different visions for what the taxes ought to be. And I kind of want to point out historically the estate taxes had a kind of a liberty, limited government kind of a purpose behind them. It was having a small number of people own all of the land was viewed as a danger to the freedom of individuals, because then we'll have royalty dukes and earls that own all these massive estates that will hold the rest of the people in bondage. So we've gone from that kind of a libertarian, we want everybody to start out on an equal footing, to a social justice model where if you are successful and create wealth, we want to confiscate it. We want to use the power of the state to take wealth, property by force, and we're going to take your property, which is a completely different model, but we get to the same result. And it's part of the reason why the move to abolish the estate tax just can't get wind, because there are some liberty interests at stake if we just allow a small number of people to accumulate wealth. So all these issues fly around and kind of collide on the gift and estate tax arena.
Yeah, and I think, Rick, you know, I don't know this, obviously, because who does know, but the fact that the Republicans are taking this completely polar stance and saying we want to abolish the estate, the transfer taxes, as you point out, not likely to happen, but maybe it's good posturing for them to end up where they want to end up, which is maybe with something different than the $1 million that we're dealing with now. So it's hard to tell, because this negotiating and infighting that happens in Congress, there's just all sorts of interesting dynamics. I want to point out a couple more things in the president's budget proposal that affect the estate and gift world dramatically. In addition to what we've already talked about, there's some other issues that are also very troubling, and that is when we work with large estates and they're held in partnerships or they're held in LLCs, there are certain discounting rules that we've used for years and years that the IRS has been in agreement on, and they're taking shots at those and wanting to make sure that you can't effectively you can't use those anymore, which means that it would be very, very make it it's like base broadening in the income tax world. This would mean that it would be much more difficult to do any planning to get beyond the values that they give you for the lifetime exemptions, because you wouldn't be able to use discounting in places where it's entirely justified.
Yeah, and so then, let's be clear. That's I know you want to move on, but let's be clear. The discounting is a market-based analysis. What is this property worth if we were to sell it in the market? And we go out and look and we say, well, here's what a buyer would pay. And we're able to get a value based upon it's a market value. And so this desire to throw out the discounts is, in fact, a distrust of the market. We do not trust the market to tell us the true value. We want politicians and bureaucrats to let us know what the true value is, not what the marketplace says the value is.
Exactly right. Thanks for clarifying that. And also, you know, and many of our clients that have been through this discussion understand this, is that the dynasty trust, to which you can transfer your wealth and which will ultimately benefit your children, grandchildren, and so on, that right now can go on in perpetuity. So it could last for 100, 200, 300 years. And the president's proposal, that they want to limit that to 90 years. So everything about that, you have to look at the whole package, not just the exemptions and the rates, because these other things dramatically affect estate and gift taxation. So anyway, that's probably where we are on the Democratic side of things. So we should probably talk about, you know, what's going on in Congress right now, Rick, and what do we expect to see for the end of the year or between now and the elections, and then I guess in the lame duck session.
Yeah, I think we can talk about that. Congress is in session right now. And I think, as I'll paraphrase Mark Twain, no man's reputation or property is safe when Congress is in session. So we can talk about that and what's likely to happen here in the next couple of months when we come back from the break that we have to take right now.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjoe Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjoe Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everybody. Rich, before the break, you mentioned that a part of the Obama budget proposal was to limit the length of time that dynasty trusts could be estate tax free for 90 years. This is an interesting issue that kind of illustrates some of the dynamic between of our federal system, the dynamic between the states and the federal government. The federal government's taxation of estates, of the transfer tax, has deferred to local state law on property issues. So the states define what is property and who's the owner of property and when does the ownership change, and the federal government taxes that. And until really about a decade ago, most states had an esoteric law called the rule against perpetuities, which is basically a rule that prohibits a trust or a corporation or a limited partnership or anything from lasting forever, that these kinds of collective ownership and non-personal ownership mechanisms had to have a termination date. They couldn't just last forever. And starting about a decade ago, a couple of states and I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was Delaware and South Dakota, or maybe Alaska, were the first that said, hey, we're going to throw that rule against perpetuities out. We're just going to make it not a rule at all. And prior to that, to do dynasty planning, which is a kind of planning where we're looking long, long, long term, we're looking at making a trust or other corporate or business entity last hundreds of years, maybe even theoretically in perpetuity. So prior to that, we had to, frankly, go offshore. So having these rule against perpetuities states pop up made it possible to do that planning domestically. And that started kind of a rush, and now the number is in excess of 20 states, and there's a variety of mechanisms they employ to get to this result. But 20 plus states now have variations of this abolished rule against perpetuities. And what that means is property can be held in a trust and it never vests in an individual. And if an individual never owns it, the individual never transfers it, and it's the transfer that gets taxed. So with dynasty planning, kind of a really powerful and cool thing that we can do is put property in this trust where because it never vests in individuals. When generations pass away and die, it never gets taxed. And the rate of accumulation from one generation to the next goes up dramatically if you do not have this 25, 35, 45, 55, sometimes even 65% tax on all that accumulation. So it allows families to build wealth significantly. For the federal government to come in and say, we're going to step into this area that has traditionally been a state property issue, and we're going to now define when property can vest, is a fundamental to our federalist system. Is that a power that is enumerated in the Constitution that the federal government can exercise, or is that a power limited to the states? And that's central, front and center, I think, in all of these political issues. And one of the things we get to watch happen here. So that's kind of a transition from that dynasty issue. We want to look now for the last part of our program here on some of the current legislative issues going on. And we've got tax extenders. Tax reform is a big issue. We've got what's going to get decided in the next few weeks here and what's going to be pushed off to the lame duck. And I guess one of the things that has to happen that we want to just at least mention is that if spending packages are not passed, the federal government or big pieces of the federal government are going to start shutting down after September 30th because we don't have a budget. We've just had these continuing resolutions that allow the government to continue spending money at their former rates. And all of that is set to expire right here in the middle of the election season. So we're going to get to watch the politicians do some of the dirty negotiating with each other as we're contemplating who we want to have run the country for us.
Rick, that's a big issue. It's interesting how all of these things get pushed off. I think the politicians, as you say, kick the can down the road and say, well, let's put this into the next election cycle. And then we end up with all of this going on right in the middle of trying to decide who's going to run the country. And it makes for, I guess if you like this kind of stuff, it makes for entertainment. It's also, I think, to me, it's one of those things where I don't appreciate the fact that it's turned into entertainment, because it's serious stuff. It affects all of us, and it affects anybody being able to plan or accumulate wealth or deal with wealth. So, but you mentioned tax reform, Rick, and frankly, that's one of the things that keeps the politicians from putting anything in place that the rest of us can plan on. I think they've all determined that there's kind of something inherently wrong with our system, that we need to reform it. And in fact, both parties are set to do that. And for example, and we'll just talk about some of the things that are likely to happen here. If President Obama is reelected, he's already put this business tax reform framework into place, and or tried to. And what that would entail is the top corporate tax rate of 28%, that's down from in the high 30s, and a deduction for domestic manufacturing, a permanent research credit, which has gone in and out. On the other hand, Governor Romney has proposed a top corporate tax rate of 25% and supports some movement toward a territorial tax system. And maybe, Brick, you can tell us what that means. I'm not exactly sure what this territorial tax system means, and maybe you aren't either. But
so you're throwing that question to me. I have no idea what it means.
So anyway, we all need to figure that out, I guess. But and they think that they can do this on a revenue neutral basis, which means if you lower rates and it's on a revenue neutral basis, Rick, what are they really saying? What happens?
Well, I think when politicians call anything revenue neutral, let me just be blunt, they're lying. I think there's no such thing as a revenue neutral change in the tax code. Anytime you change the tax rates, anytime you change what you're taxing or how you're taxing it or even what you call the tax, you're going to modify the incentives. You're going to give people incentives to do one thing and disincentives to do another. And people will change their behavior in response to the tax code, and it will – every tax change will change the revenue. I think that revenue neutral is doublespeak for we don't want to tell you what's really happening here. I'm
right.
A little cynical on that one.
Well, and that's true, because if you lower rates, you have to broaden the base. In other words, you have to broaden the things that you're taxing, and you do that by getting rid of itemized deductions, getting rid of other deductions. What's the best way to do it? You know, I don't know. But let's be real about it and say we're going to raise more revenue. That means overall you're going to get taxed more. So it's not revenue neutral.
Taxpayers – are like horses or dogs or children. That there's a very simple principle. They will move away from pressure. So if you want the horse to go left, you put pressure on the right, and they'll move away from that. They'll turn left. If you want them to go right, you put pressure on the right, if you want them to go right, you put pressure on the left, and they'll turn right. And same with dogs. You say no. Or with a child, if you help them know where the boundaries are in life, and taxpayers aren't stupid. If an activity is taxed, taxpayers will avoid that activity, and they will look for the activity that's not taxed. And so we create incentives and disincentives by our tax policies. So home ownership is rewarded because we get to deduct the interest on a loan. So in fact, not only home ownership, but borrowing money, debt financed home ownership. So what do we see? Debt financed home ownership. And every tax creates pressure on taxpayers, and their natural tendency, they're going to move away from it. Whatever is taxed, they will try to avoid. So if you tax income, what are people going to do? They're going to move away from that and try to make less. It's almost a proverb. People don't want to make $250,000 a year, because if they do, they'll be one of those rich people that have to pay more taxes. So that people will move away from that pressure point and will try and stay just under that, even if they're doing well in business. So,
right, and that's, you know, and to me that is completely contrary to what makes this country great, because you need to encourage entrepreneurs, business owners, people that create jobs, to continue to do so, and not to somehow try to limit what they're making by playing games or not working as hard or shifting income somewhere else. There are all kinds of things that people will come up with, and none of them let them focus on what we're trying to do in this country, which is be capitalistic, create jobs, create an economy that's thriving. So that's a little bit of a concern, and I guess as you said earlier, we're kind of talking about our own politics here a little bit, but as we look at it from the tax side and the estate tax side and the legal side of things, you can see that if you cut through all the rhetoric, what really makes things happen and what really gets rid of deficits is creating jobs and a thriving economy, and you don't do that by taxing more heavily. You do that by taxing less, and which encourages people to go out and work more.
Well, you know, one of the things that, from a policy perspective, that I guess I want to advocate for, not that my voice will be heard, but is tax stability. The part of the reason why we have instability, the politicians haven't told us what the rules are and they keep changing the rules, is they don't get this principle that taxpayers are going to move away from the pressure. If you tax inactivity, they're going to move away from it. Politicians keep thinking that we can come up with some perfect tax structure that will fairly redistribute the wealth from so that everybody has the same outcome and nobody has an advantage regardless of whether they work or not, and if we're just clever enough, we can come up with a tax system where nobody's able to avoid paying their fair share of taxes, and it's never going to happen. So they keep the rules fluid, they keep the rules open and unresolved so that they can try and see which way people are moving, and whichever way people are moving, okay, tax that thing over there. They're doing that now. And that kind of we'll let you know what we're going to tax when we see what you're going to do approach just doesn't work. It makes it impossible to plan. It makes it impossible to start a business. And so it's anti-liberty. It's hostile to creating jobs. And the people that are advocating for that kind of a system just don't get it.
Rick, I completely agree with that. And what we want to leave our listeners with today is maybe these two things. We don't know what's going to happen with the tax rules. We've got everyone is kind of advocating their own agenda. But as I think we've pointed out, it's when you've got the deficits, it's not going to get better. Either though, even if the rates go down, they'll broaden the base or they'll change the rules somewhere else. So the best bet is, especially if you're thinking about estate planning and need to plan for your estate, do that immediately. Don't wait. Do that this year. And if you've got income that you can trigger this year on the capital gains or the dividend side, do that, because the rates are very likely to go up, and almost 100% certainty that they will go up. What they'll go to may be in question, but they will go up. So I think those are the takeaways from the show today. And we'll obviously be back and we'll comment more on this as things become more clear. But that's the way it is today, and we will be back here in another week on What About Wealth. And in the meantime, give us a call or take steps to put into action things that need to be done before the end of this year.
For listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.